Hello, welcome to, what is it? Movies You Should See. Thank you, Emma. 1990 classic, Misery, Rob Reiner, Stephen King, Kathy Bates, James Caan. Hello, everyone.
James Caan.
James Caan.
Yeah.
Caan. Just listening to
it. No, it's not the same one, is it?
No, different Caan.
Yeah.
Different Caan. We have a interesting list of people here today. Alison's here.
Hi.
She lives here.
I do.
Laura's back. She doesn't live here, but we like her.
Hello.
Jonathan Wilkinson's here. He got to the sign-up sheet.
Oh,
I'm sorry, John. I'm teasing you.
I'm going to go cry and cut myself.
Well, we have... Don't do that.
Please don't.
That's sad.
Please don't. Stay here.
That's really bad. I was just joking. It's okay. And we have a new podcaster for the first time appearing on any podcast at all. It's Mrs. Emma Foster. Hello, Emma.
Hello, exclusive.
Hey, Emma. Laser
noises.
How you doing, Mrs. Foster?
Oh, thank you, Ms. Downing. I'm very well, thank you. Go say, I'm very happy that two thirds of the F factor.
I know, I know. Fudge and Foster.
Yeah, boy.
Wonderful. Welcome to the show and that.
Yeah. See, even if we were married, you wouldn't have an F name.
No, I'd just have...
You'd have an S name.
Smith.
Then you could be FFS. So between the three of you, you'd be like, for fuck's sake.
We'd have to run that past Mary, the other member of the F Factor, to see if you're allowed in.
For flipping fuck's sake. Or something like, we could get creative on the third F. I'm not having Smith. It's too dull, I'm sorry.
You see,
I'm keeping mine.
Mash them together.
It's
Downing
too
Smith.
Dull.
How's the Downing Smith?
Whoa.
Ignore noises like that. Just keep going.
Just
keep going.
Just try and not be fair.
Pretend it doesn't happen. Seriously. Pretend it doesn't happen.
It's like recording with Shed.
I know. What does he do while he's recording?
Everything.
He's watching eight tellies like Elvis.
That's the conclusion I'm forced to draw. He's watching eight tellies, he's doing a little bit of woodwork, and he's crafting a novel, and some sculpturing, and he's cooking a meal. What is it?
Sculpting.
What did I say?
Oh, you got double
sculpturing.
Slap then.
I don't know why I would have any reason to know anything about sculpture. Anyway.
Just basic English that you should know, really.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to be up on Henry Moore and Rodin and things like that, but, you know, at least not
say,
a conjugate.
It's not like I've ever spent a year living amongst
a sculpture park,
is
no.
it?
No.
I have never been exposed
like
to it.
When you open your curtains in the morning, there was a fucking sculpture outside your window.
That was a
Where's
Henry
Doctor Who fan?
In a lecture when you're looking out of the window and there was a sculpture.
That was a Henry Moore that was right outside my bedroom window.
I know what the problem was. No one was sculpting. They brought sculptures.
No, people were sculpting.
It already been sculpted.
People were sculpting.
That's
most
right.
A lot of them are from Breton sculpture students.
Did you ever sculpt?
I didn't sculpt.
You're just turning into a euphemism or something.
Actually, I did. I did sculpt.
Sorry,
Jesus.
What's going on?
I
sculpted. I did, because in the first year I was learning about how to teach art, right? And in that we did clay modeling, which I'm going to say is sculpting. I remember it very clearly.
One might call it modeling.
I remember it very clearly. I made a small...
Is that the sculpting happening in the background?
There's somebody moving around.
Oh, it's me. I'm just taking my cardigan off because I'm a little bit...
She's hot and bothered by your sculpting, Tori.
I'm sorry. Is that like
oh, mother, bring the brain pills.
I'm back.
Telling my sculpture story, Laura.
Sorry.
I think it's a modelling story, Laura.
Yeah, I think
was it like in Ghost?
I made a small barnyard. See, yeah, I did. I made a little clay piggy and a little clay barn. I remember that.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
Did you make a?
That was that
did
was
you make a little clay penguin.
I didn't like
to try and bring it back.
Yeah, please bring it back, somebody.
At least
At least we said the movie title on Tuesday night.
Yeah, we did. We're doing Misery tonight. It was made in 1990. I think Richard did say it, but we weren't listening.
Okay, let's go around the room and each give our summary opinion of what we thought of the movie Misery from 1990, directed by Rob Reiner. Alison.
I love it.
What up?
It's brilliant, this. It's absolutely. I mean, I'm an avid Stephen King fan. I've read him since I was too young to be reading Stephen King. And I read Misery long before the film came out. Obviously, you go through the things of, well, that's not him. But I'm convinced that that is Annie Wilkes. And I was fine with James Caan after like 2 minutes of being Paul Sheldon and erasing the one that I'd built in my head. There's a few changes, but I'm okay with it because you'd be horrified if it went as far as the book. I might have lost you all. But this is just dark enough, jumpy enough, terrifying enough, and the performance of Kathy Bates is outstanding. And James Caan has never been more restrained in that much agony ever. I've never seen anyone play pain quite like James Caan in this movie, and for those reasons, I love it.
I'm just amused by, you see, when you said you were too young to be reading Stephen King books,
yeah,
that sent my mind on a train of thought to imagining learning to read books written by Stephen King. In a kind of, here is Peter, here is Jane, here is a hammer. See Jane kill Peter. Peter bleeds. All these sorts of things. Well, it'd be a nice little way to learn to read that.
I started when I was about 10. Yeah. No, it must. Yeah, maybe 11. Because I think I think what happened, how I got into Stephen King was I watched the miniseries of Salem's Lot. It's a 2 or 3-parter or something
the,
like that.
James Mason.
Yes, the James Mason and David
James
Soul.
James Mason, Salem's Lot.
Yeah.
It's about 2 hours, I think. It's 2 hour long.
Well, it's two things. Chunks. It's in two chunks. And it was put on telly in two chunks. And we were on holiday in Skegness in 1981. In a static caravan with my grandma,
me,
my mum and my brother. And we watched it on television. I was 11, my brother was 8. And that was the last night he slept for about 3 months.
So
watching Stephen King.
Not as bad as Ghostwatch then.
Well, kind of no. But nevertheless, terrifying. And as soon as you see that and then you realise he's a popular author, you're like, oh, I want to read that now.
Yeah.
And then I read other things and then read all of the things. So yeah, I love the book. I thought it was really good. And understanding a little bit about where Stephen King's head was at and what it's an allegory for is really interesting, I think. And we'll get there, I suppose.
Jonathan, what did you think of Misery?
I'd like you again, Rich.
Good.
That was Tuesday. Being like, why do you hate me picking all these rubbish movies? And I've never actually seen this film.
Have you not?
I knew what happened, because everyone knows what happens. Crazy lady. Mm. But it's kind of like the twist in Psycho. It's not really a twist anymore that she does something involved with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
But I'd love this film. I was watching it going, yes, there is a character, an evil, twisted character, though, that has a different side to her that you can actually get your teeth into and analyse her and stuff instead of just being, I'm evil because, yeah, I need to cut up some teenagers because I paid to hostel. And I just love the performance by Kathy Bates. I, like you, was a Stephen King fan, but a bit later, I was like, my sister read them all, and she had them all on the bookshelf, so I read quite a lot between like the ages of 15 and 18.
Yeah.
We led up from Goosebumps, probably a bit after your time, Alison. There was a bit of Goosebumps going on.
Yeah, my sister's into the Goosebumps books.
Yeah.
There were loads of them.
You see, I was into serious horror. I was reading Stephen King and James Herbert and other guys like that. Richard Lehman wrote a couple of really weird and twisted ones that I liked. And, oh, God, yeah, some really dark books in my formative years, about 13.
Yeah, that's not what Goosebumps are. Goosebumps ones are spooky. They were for tweens, but tweens hadn't been invented yet.
Real horror.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
stuff where, you know, I can remember reading Salem's Lot for the first time when I was 12 and being on holiday and there were bits in passages where I couldn't breathe anymore, so I had to put the book face down and just go, oh my God, oh yeah. And then, you know, just calm down a bit before I could read on, because I was scared reading it in broad daylight on holiday in Cornwall. And, I, you know, when a writer's got that, and for me, he eclipsed all other horror authors, and I just kind of didn't want their voice as much as I wanted Stephen King's voice. So that's why I became like... a little bit Annie Wilkes-y, you know. I kind of knew a few details about him. You know, there was a certain amount, element of recognition about what it's like to obsess about people. And my two obsessions in my teenage years were Prince and Stephen King. And, you know, if I'd have been asked those questions, I would have been able to answer them, you know.
Emma. Spooky. Emma, Mrs. Foster.
Hello.
What did you think of Misery?
Yeah, it's fucking great, isn't it? Next. No, seriously. I was sort of like you guys, read a whole ton of Stephen King when I was a teenager. I've sort of become pretty sort of skeptical about his work in later years. Especially currently sitting through Under the Dome.
Very long. Are you watching the TV show?
Under the Dome was smashing.
Oh, don't ruin it for me. I haven't read it yet. It's on my bookshelf, ready to go.
It's good, Under the Dome.
Yeah, the book's great. We watched about half an hour of the telly.
It didn't make me go mental at the end like The Stand did.
The Stand made you go mental at the
end?
Oh,
I was angry at the end of The Stand.
Oh, really?
I was very upset by it. I'm hurt by it, actually.
Stephen King's going to hurt you.
He hurt me.
He hurts you sometimes.
Yeah.
Have you seen the miniseries of The Stand that was on in the States back in the 90s?
That's
really good, isn't it?
It's a really good production for what it is, but ultimately it has the same ending as the book, and thusly pisses me off. But that's nothing to do with the production itself. We both, Alison and I both set out to read The Stand at the same time.
Yeah.
And we both started at the same time, and I flew through it in about a week.
But I flip burgers for 42 hours a week.
So you're 70% in now.
I'm only 70% there. I read it when I was a teenager twice. But I'm still enjoying it unfolding because I can't remember.
I really enjoyed The Stand.
I thought you were reading the director's cut thing.
Yeah, yeah, the full one.
Yeah.
You know what puts me off about The Stand? The fact that it's like 800 odd pages.
And then some. It's more like 1400.
Have you seen Under the Dome? It's half a tree.
Yeah. I look at it and go, yeah, fuck that shit.
It's more like 1400 is The Stand with a full Stephen King intended edition, as I like to call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about 1400 pages, which is why I'm only 70%, but I've read 1,000 pages, you know.
It added to the pain for me. It was like, I've come all the way through these pages, Stephen King. I've read every word on every page, and you paid me back with that. You bastard.
Horrible man. You horrible man.
Well, according to this, it is like only 10 words shorter than The Stand.
Now, it was awesome.
It's a fantastic
book. I loved it.
Oh my God.
That is still possibly my favourite book, let alone favourite Stephen King novel.
Yeah. It's rather beautiful.
So, I was a big fan of Needful Things.
Needful Things, really? Yeah. Have you seen the weird, dodgy TV movie make of that?
It's not dodgy. It's got Max von Sydow.
I know it's got Max von Sydow in it. That's how it tricks you. You think, oh, it's got Max von Sydow in it. It's going to be great. You know, it's Needful Things and it's him. So
and
it's
Ed
going
Harris.
To be great. And it's shit.
It's not shit.
It's so shit, Richard.
Wasn't shit.
You see, this is the thing about Stephen King movies. They're either masterpieces or they're detritus.
All their masterpieces that Stephen King hates against all advice.
Let me just stop everybody right now because we've not heard Laura's
summary
yet.
We must.
So let's hear from Laura and then we'll rip Stephen King movies apart.
Okay.
Laura, what have you got for us?
Well, I hadn't seen this before, so I sat down this morning to watch it after you put me through Ghost Watch and ruined Heathers and my teenage years for me.
Yeah.
And I was...
You were
thought,
feeling
well,
quite bereft, weren't you?
Yeah,
really?
I think the term was a deflated sad balloon last night.
Yeah.
And I sat down this morning and thought, well, it can't really get much worse. But I actually, I absolutely thoroughly enjoyed this. I just could not tear my eyes away from it. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Every time he got hit with a sledgehammer or fell out of bed, I was there feeling every ounce of pain with him. Yeah. And what I thought was really impressive about this film was the fact that when you watch horror movies normally, you're like, why are you doing that? Why don't you do this? Why are you going into the woods in the middle of the dark? Whereas everything he did was what I would have done in the same situation.
Yeah.
He did everything he could to get out of there. And it was just fate and bad luck that stopped him and her, obviously, every time. And I just thought it was really well put together, brilliant story, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
There you go. That sounds like a complete wall of love.
Yep.
I'm very happy. Very happy indeed. Because this is one of the good ones. And in the good ones, I'm going to put The Shining. Richard disagrees, but he's wrong.
Yeah, I like The Shining.
Stephen King Shining. Didn't like The Shining.
Stephen King can suck my knob. He's just blatantly wrong.
It's a shit film. It's not a shit film. And Stanley Kubrick couldn't make a good film to save his fucking life. There.
Oh my god!
Wow. I've said it. Just wow. Did you not enjoy Full Metal Jacket?
That's his one good one.
And to be fair, Full Metal Jacket is fairly shit as soon as they go to Vietnam.
Yeah.
It is actually, yeah. Anyway.
Hated Clockwork Orange. Hated The Shining. Hated Eyes Wide Shut. Hated AI, and he didn't get to finish it, but he did all the work.
Yeah, but you can tell what's in your book, Kevin.
Hated 2001?
2001 is just
everybody
music
hates 2001. And it,
I don't hate 2001.
Do you know what? You show me somebody who says they understand the end of 2001, and I'll show you a tosser.
Go on then, Emma. Put him in his fucking place.
He evolves into a star child, the end.
What does that even fucking mean? You don't understand the end of 2001.
He evolves, you know, Yid.
It's like suddenly he's a baby in space. What the fuck?
Yeah, why not?
No, yeah, he evolves. Have you read the book, Rich?
No, this is what everybody goes, well, you should have read the book and then you'd understand the end of the film. No, I should be able to watch a film and understand what happens at the end of the fucking movie without reading the book about the film. Which is obviously better than explaining the story than the film was.
Can I just say, I didn't say that you would have understood it had you read the book. I merely asked, have you read the book?
No.
Right, okay.
Let's be honest, Richard only started reading about a year and a half ago.
And that's only Stephen King books.
Before then, you prefer to be read too, let's be honest. You liked your audio books.
I thought you meant that every night you'd sit down on the end of the bed and read him a story.
Page 900 of The Stand.
That would really help me get to bed, Alison, if you would do that for me.
Well, read to you on a night.
If I knew that it was like story time and I was going to get another
chapter. You're 34.
Yeah?
back to Stanley Kubrick. What about Dr. Strangelove, Spartacus, or Paths of Glory?
Yeah, all of them. What about Lolita? That's all right.
You can't hate on Spartacus.
You can't hate on Spartacus.
You really can't. He's not universally bad. You just don't like a lot of his films. So it's mean of you to be mean.
I'm sorry.
I agree with you about The Shining, though, Rich.
Yeah. I don't
care. Have you seen the miniseries? It's boring as shit.
I'm also just held up with the fact that he's supposed to be amazing. And I'm like, he's fucking not amazing. He's not. Some films are quite good, but he's not amazing.
Anyway.
For further film ignorance, see the Hour of the Wolf episode.
Here's a quote. Can I just ask a question? What the fuck was this film about?
What was Misery about?
Misery. Next question.
What?
I think she's asking what Misery was about.
What's Misery about? And I said Misery. No, okay, seriously. It's about Stephen King being afraid of his crazy fan people.
It's about drugs.
Yeah, it's about his addiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's just about a woman that kidnaps an author and hobbles him.
Nah, it's really not. It's about his cocaine addiction. It's about all the little treats he had in his top drawer in his writing room.
He specifically said it's not like a hidden metaphor or anything. No. It was like, this is about my battle with drug addiction.
Exactly. He's been through the mill and he likened Annie Wilkes as cocaine. and the things that she says to him, and his trappedness and inertia as his addiction. So yeah, it's a nice little counterplay, and when you see it in those terms, you can kind of understand the internal turmoil that goes through someone who's trying to say no when everything around you screams yes.
It was just the kind of arguments and things she'd shout at him.
Yeah.
The I'm making it possible for you to do this, and you can't do this without me. You crap without me. You're doing it wrong.
I'm doing all of this for you.
It was
you don't appreciate me. You're not grateful.
She was so good at being nuts.
She was, but she was so good at transitioning from butterfly to melt.
I was going to say that's what I like about her character, is that it goes from, she's not that bad. Might be a bit odd, but oh no.
It's not
she's full on psycho.
Aren't you glad that Kathy Bates isn't your mum? I mean,
fucking hell. Like, Can you imagine her putting you to bed? You'd be like, no, no, get out.
I mean, because like,
I'm on this. I can do this myself.
I'm willing to bet that for each of us, there's been a moment in our lives where we've done something so horrific that we've made our mothers so mad at us that it's surpassed any other madness we've ever created in that woman before. Now imagine that woman is Kathy fucking Bates, and it's horrifying. It's even worse. You never got to see your mum in misery.
No.
Someone did, and I feel bad for that person.
I like to think that Kathy Bates won't let her children watch.
Do you know what? I actually get the feeling that Kathy Bates is a right laugh in real life. She seems like quite a nice person, and up for a laugh, and up for doing anything, and being silly, and that sort of thing. She was brilliant in The Office. If you've not seen her in The Office, she's worth watching that, because she's great. And she's terrifying and nice in equal proportion. And I bet she's like that in real life.
Oh, terrifying and nice.
Yeah. Nicely terrifying.
Rather than terrifyingly nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to... Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awful.
They are two different things.
They are very much so.
On it.
I think I prefer nicely terrifying. Yeah. It sounds quite kinky. Oh
Do you know how many film adaptations there are based on Stephen King's writing?
67. Are they really?
67.
See, a lot of people have had a stab at it, and I tell you, you shouldn't have. Whoever made Langoliers, go home.
Actually, if we're picking if we're picking anyone, the person who did Children of the Corn 5.
Awful one with Pierce Brosnan in it that's on Channel 5 like now, I think, or something. Oh, God, I can't remember what it's called. Pierce Brosnan was an absolutely shocking one.
What, a Stephen King one?
Yeah. Bugger, I can't remember what it is now.
I think Pet Sematary 2 is awful.
Of course it is.
Pet Sematary 2.
of the 67 examples.
Carrie's good. Carrie's amazing.
Oh, I've not seen Carrie.
Carrie, it's Carrie, on my list. Carrie. Get it watched. It's amazing. It's one of the best.
Okay.
Some of these are very good.
Christine's Middle of the Road.
I've read the book, but I've not seen the film.
Leave it at that. Then.
Yeah.
But they do quite well. Stand By Me is the best. There, I said it.
Well, what about, you see, this one's very good. Misery's
this one's
really
very
good,
but it's a very, very different story. And I'm emotionally very attached to Stand By Me.
Do you know what? The Green Mile is basically word for word, book to film perfect.
It's easy to turn that into a film just story, isn't it?
There's less gore and horror in The Green Mile.
Mm. You don't have to have a giant alien spider thing at the end of the film going,
Oh, right. I found out. It's Bag of Bones. It's a miniseries and it fucking sucks knobs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen that. I read it. It was meh. It's not one of the greatest, so you don't seek out the films of the stories you didn't enjoy so much.
How much does Misery differ from the book then?
Okay, right. We've already mentioned the sledgehammer thing.
Oh, God, yeah.
While this author is trapped in her home and having his work where he's killed her favourite character off, and thusly the series and all of it.
Yeah.
Because he wants to write for himself now. He doesn't want to write detritus romance shite for women like her, really. He's
yeah.
had enough. But she finds out, because he's got his manuscript with him when he crashes, that he's killed her off. And that cannot happen in Annie Wilkes's mind. He must stop that from happening. And then there's a decision to rewrite it so that she lives.
It doesn't rewrite it. She makes it, I like the bit where she makes him make it plausible. Like, yeah. No, she cheat. That whole scene is where I went to the movies and she's on about the cereals and the guy going over the edge of the cliff. They're going, no, but he went over the edge of the cliff last week. We saw that. You oh, cheated. Yeah. And she just goes mental and she's like, no, you need it to be realistic. We know she didn't get to the doctor.
She was just there. God, she was just framed there sometimes, wasn't she? The night where the storm is and he's lying in bed and there's like a crackle of lightning and she's just there. It's like, oh my God! She's terrifying. And at the end of the day, she's just a frumpy old redneck out in the middle of nowhere, terrified Christian woman who's quite sweet and very, very puritanical.
Except she's not, because of the he finds in the scrapbook.
In the scrapbook, yeah, but we don't see that till quite late on,
which implies that she's always been unhinged. So Kathy Bates won an Oscar for this performance, then.
She did.
Yeah.
She absolutely nailed it. She nailed it. And let's talk about who didn't get the job.
Okay.
Kathy
Bates character.
Bette Midler didn't get the job.
Thank fuck for that. I mean, you know, we're talking about this woman who is utterly terrifying. When she turns a face, she, you know, it's like, oh God, oh God. I don't think that I'd feel that way about her. Certainly, you know, she just can't be.
And that is not to do down Bette Midler.
No,
because Bette Midler is the definition of star power.
Yeah, but
you know,
would
she be
prepared to wear what she wore?
I don't know. I think she Bette Midler is not a woman that has problems being uglified.
All right.
Okay. I mean, if you doubt that, watch Disney's Hocus Pocus.
I was just
going to because it was the 99p rental on iTunes last night and I rented it.
Oh, did you?
I can watch that later.
Oh,
so
God.
She doesn't mind that. And this woman can act, she can sing, she can dance, she can do everything.
She's got the wind beneath her wings.
She's just such a storming talent. And yeah, I doubt her ability to do this as well as Kathy Bates did it.
Yeah.
Because one thing Bette Midler doesn't have is ultimately, you know, she's not dark and fucked up.
No, she's
whereas
not.
Whereas Kathy Bates, I'm not so sure.
I'd never seen her before this either.
I'm not sure I had. Not to a point where you'd take notice of her.
Certainly, she was utterly new to me. I didn't know who she was. No, I knew who James Caan was. Seen The Godfather, and I'd seen him about. I think my mum thought he was dishy, so he was on my radar.
Women of that age would like James Caan.
He's dishy as James Caan.
I think my own mother would have watched things because James Caan are in them.
Yeah,
was in them.
Yeah. So, but Kathy Bates. No, I don't. I really don't think that I knew her before this. Let's scroll the way. But my God, she's been busy. Fuck me.
In Fried Green Tomatoes before this? Or Tomatoes?
I don't think that she was.
She was in Roe vs. Wade, which I've definitely seen. She was in Dick Tracy.
Of course.
Everyone was in Dick Tracy. That's what I've heard anyway.
Arthur 2 on the Rocks.
Oh, good Lord.
She was in Cagney and Lacey once.
Amazing!
Oh, yeah. The Arthur films are just upsetting.
She was in a film called Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, which I've seen, but I can't remember her being in that. It's one of those that I'll probably watch again, actually. It's a good one.
I was reading through the trivia on IMDb, and guess who they wanted to cast in the Broadway play? Julia Roberts as Annie Wilkes.
Oh my god.
Stephen King said no.
Good.
Why would you want a shaved monkey playing Annie Wilkes?
You see, the thing is, you believe that, you know, if Annie Wilkes falls on you, you've got to believe that she can swing that sledgehammer.
Yeah.
with enough force
and get you out of a car and carry you back to your her house and, you know, lift him on the bed and things like that.
Yeah, it can't be a slight person. You've got to have a stocky person doing this role. Kathy Bates was perfect. You know, for me, seeing someone I'd never seen before be that brilliant, I was gobsmacked, really. And she really was Annie Wilkes, who I'd read. I was really happy.
She scared the fuck out of me.
Yeah, she's horrible, isn't she?
I wonder what a gender bent version of this would be like. So, like, giant haystacks playing the Annie Wilkes character, and some spindly man, like, I don't know, pick a spindly man. Someone out of a boy band. One of them off One Direction.
Yeah, being a whippet thing.
Yeah, being the...
With his hair.
Yeah.
A whippet thing with his hair.
Someone who looks like an ice gem just landed on their head.
Alison.
Hello.
Talk to me about Misery.
I think what this film really does is just put you in Paul's place. And it must have been really difficult to play him, because you're not top fiddler. Kathy Bates is going to rampage all over this film. It's hers. And you're in the chair, sort of completely hobbled in your performance as much as anything else. So, I'm you know, on IMDb, apparently William Goldman said how many people were offered it. And how many turned it down?
Pretty much lots of them.
Pretty much all of Hollywood, I think.
Is it as many people as turned down Sam Wheat? Ghost?
Here we go. William Hurt, Kevin Kline, Michael Douglas, Harrison Ford, Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Richard Dreyfuss, Gene Hackman, Robert Redford, and Warren Beatty.
But it's not just that they were overshadowed by Kathy Bates, but it's also the fact that it's quite an emasculated role. He's completely under her control. So it's not even just from acting chops that, you know, you're not going to be the lead man in this film, because it's there isn't a lead man. It's also that the actual character himself is under her control, and despite his efforts to fight back and escape, he still ends up tied to a bed and brutally with the sledgehammer.
That scene.
Oh, it was horrific.
I mean, I've seen some scenes in horror movies. I've seen lots of crazy horror movies and stuff, but that one, I think it's the fact that the build-up is...
Oh, you just know what she's going to do, and it's just... Oh.
Yeah, there's a block of it, and he's been unconscious. She's injected him, so he's been passed out, and he wakes up, and as he slowly becomes cognizant, we are as well. He's completely tied to this bed with his feet apart. And it's awful, with a block of wood, and you're like, oh, no, this is...
She's giving the story...
Have we read the book? Because in the book, she don't just break his ankles, she cuts his feet off.
Oh my god.
She cuts the fuckers off and cauterizes them. So this film has really, it's reined it back in, and, you know, I suppose it kind of had to be. Not too many people want to see that on film. We only see one ankle, and it's fucking enough, right? So we don't really want to see sores and amputation while someone is awake.
Which is funny, because that's all they put in modern horror films these days, pretty much.
I was going to say, if they remade this, they would show you having that foot slowly sawed off.
With a rusty... Hacksaw.
I wouldn't be giving it the score that I'm going to give this, though.
That's the beauty of this film, though, isn't it? It's the fact that there's lots of implied bits here and there, and it's the creepiness. It's
the come on.
Yeah,
kind
the suspense.
That, you know, yeah.
Built up.
You know, he finally gets out of his room after he's made a bobby pin key. And he gets out of his room and she's coming back. She's coming fucking back. And, you know, that whole feeling of hurry the fuck up.
Yeah.
No, don't do that. Oh, my God, don't do all that. Why are you on the floor? Fucking no. You know,
and when he puts the penguin back at the wrong, in the wrong direction, you're like, that's going to come back and hurt
you.
Yeah, all of that stuff. So well done. It's outrageous. It's like textbook tension building. I don't see it as a horror. I see it as a thriller.
Yeah.
That goes a long way. it's not horrific to me. It's just disturbing and uncomfortable. And she's horrible. And it's nice to feel horrible towards Annie Wilkes for a while.
It's a bit with the sheriff when he comes and he's making the noise and you're like, finally someone's going to find him. And then he opens the door and sees him and I'm like, I'm not really sure how this is going to end. No, and it's the gunshot and I was just like, ah, shit.
Haven't seen Stephen King / horror films before. I was like, oh, dude, stop poking your nose in. It's not going to end well for you. Just get on with life. Just accept he's dead.
He kills coppers a lot. But yeah, that was pretty good because you sort of brush it off as well. They do it well, you know. He's shouting Annie, she doesn't reply. We kind of forget that she hasn't replied and she's probably somewhere else. Yeah, no, she's not. She's behind with a fucking shotgun. Oh, there's your chest.
It's a definite so oi well moment, done. That is.
It is an oi moment.
There were loads of oi moments in this film.
The oi moment for me was when he fell out of bed that first
time. Oh, yeah.
And like, oh, my God, that hurts so much. You feel like you're in pain
and
watching
you could
it.
Feel it coming the way he landed on one hand. And you know that whatever he lands on next is going to really hurt because it's either a dislocated shoulder or two badly broken legs. So he's got no choice. Whatever happens next, it's going to hurt. Oh, it was awful, but wonderful.
But wonderful, God. And I was okay with the makeup and stuff, you know, the way that his legs look.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm very critical, you know, I've seen a lot of injuries and stuff like that. So I know what stuff looks like, and I was okay with it. It was okay. It was okay. I believed he was injured.
Yeah.
I really believed it. And, you know, his acting in pain was phenomenal.
He looked like he was in pain.
He really did. It was making me think all kinds of things about where he was going in his head to get that level of pain and to understand how much something hurt and how to communicate that to everyone. Fine job. And, you know, he's not overshadowed. He might be subtle. He might be just there, but he's us in that house. And he does such a good job of being captive and, you know, lame.
Yeah,
that's brilliant. I think they're both equals in this, you know, having read this, that, you know, the character overshadows him. I don't think so. I think it's even Stevens.
Yeah.
I think he did a fine job, you know. Maybe in the hands of somebody else they might have felt a bit too overshadowed by her and therefore played it a bit more like that.
At the end, he obviously wins, which you can call like that. But, but he turns the tables when, at the start of the film, she brings his new book in and makes him burn it. And then she gets the misery book out. It's like, yeah, Ryan's going to burn this now.
Yeah. You showed me that's what we do here.
Yep.
We finish a book and then we burn it, yeah.
You thought I could only kill misery once. Turns out you were wrong.
It's a nice thing, though, because, you know, when you're in the presence of a psycho, you've got to understand how to speak to that person. What to say to get through.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to use the word psycho to describe people that I've worked with, but I've worked with people who have volatile behaviour patterns, potentially because of the drugs that they've taken or potentially because they've got mental health difficulties. That sometimes come out in behaviours that are difficult to manage. And you never know with a new person sometimes what might trigger an emotional response that's negative. And he does a fine job of learning how to speak to her because he has to say all kinds of shit that you don't mean.
Quite early on, though, he's able to play her quite well. I mean, he manages to manipulate her into different situations quite a few times along the way. Although I wasn't, when they had the candlelit dinner and he put the stuff in her wine, I just couldn't work out whether she knew or whether it was an accident that she tipped the wine everywhere.
It's an odd one, isn't it? I don't know.
I don't think she did. No,
I don't think she did. I think it had got her then.
Yeah.
I don't know, because she knew about the penguin. How long did she know about the penguin?
I just think if you're a nurse and you're tending to someone in bed and you're changing bed sheets and that sort of thing, I wonder if you'd see the rip in the mattress.
Mm.
I don't know. Maybe I'm. Oh, I don't know. I've been thinking about it a lot all day, so maybe I'm just overthinking about all of it. But
and you know what? If she was a nurse, she'd know exactly how many tablets were there.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, I think maybe she did know.
Yeah.
But she wanted that book so much. She wanted that book so much. She let him have his little trip out until he'd done the book.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No.
We'll never know.
It's a crazy story, isn't it, really, when you think about it?
It is. In the book, she goes a lot further. You know, she booby traps him to make sure, you know, she wants to know if he's been out. So what she does is she pulls hairs out of her head and then sellotapes them at either side of the door, of the door frame.
Yeah.
And if he's come out, then it snaps. And if he's gone in certain drawers, it snaps kind of thing. So she set traps to see if he'd been out.
James Bond does the same thing in Doctor Now.
So in Osborne Book of Detective Work, which I read when I was 7.
In the book, she'd know the minute he'd got out.
Right.
As soon as she came back, she'd go through her tracks, like, open the front door, close it behind you, put your stuff down, check everything.
It's just weird that... I mean, talk about your coincidence. Just in the entire setup of the story.
That he crashed outside her house.
Yeah. I mean, just imagine the chances of there's a big crash outside and I rush out and there's J.J. Abrams in an overturned car. And I bring him down. We watch Star Trek Into Darkness. And I say, right, we're not leaving here until we do it properly.
Yeah, you say that, but she says, doesn't she, that she's been driving up and sitting in the car outside his hotel room, watching him write, and then she was following him as he left with the manuscript. Okay, it may have been serendipitous that he actually crashed, but you wonder if maybe she would have made something happen, or I don't know. It's
an interesting question.
She was there stalking him from the start.
Mm.
So it's... I don't think it's as sort of
she had
lucky
pretty much
as you
a shrine
think.
To him, yeah. Didn't she? You know, the way her books were arranged and the signed photograph of him in the middle. And
she's totally obsessed with him.
Yeah.
On this point, I'd like to say, if you've ever been in Doctor Who, please never come to my house.
It's quite scary. I mean, have you seen the Santander adverts with Jensen Button where he's like in your fucking shower? I mean, in real life, you know, it might be quite nice to meet him, but you don't want him in your fucking shower. If I just, you know, got up in the morning and he was in my bathroom, I'd be like, I'd be really fucking angry and I might hurt him. Because he's an intruder. He's just an intruder.
He's come intruder window.
I don't care if he's got sound financial advice or not. He's a fucking intruder. He might be Jensen, but I don't care. He's an intruder.
But Jessica Ernest, she can go
anywhere.
I was going to
say, is she...
Really? Could she just, like, walk into your house? Because I'm sorry, I'd be waiting with something blunt at the door for
she's
her.
She's welcome to sneak in here if she likes, but I'll keep her if she does.
This is quite interesting. So, you think about the interconnectedness of all things.
Yeah.
There's sculpture in those adverts.
A sculpture?
Yeah, and that brings us back to the beginning of the conversation.
Oh, yeah, full circle. High five.
Yes!
Let's bring misery to an end, then.
Well, can I just say, you know, I said about Julia Roberts not being meaty enough, that kind of stuff.
She's not meaty enough.
No, Stephen King's actual words were that Annie was a brawny woman who can sling a guy around, not a pixie.
Not a shaved monkey. We should find that picture out again, that picture of Julia Roberts. The truthful one.
Yeah, it's on my hard drive. Oh, it might be in a... Oh, yeah, it's in a folder.
It's a wonderful testament as to what you can do with Photoshop, actually.
It is.
You make a monkey look close to a human female. It's bizarre. Anyway, marks out of 5 for misery. Alison.
It's a solid 4.
I shouldn't be ready to write this down.
It starts off with that... What are you doing again? Oh my goodness. It starts, well, quite early on when Paul's in his car in the snow. One of my favourite tracks comes on, Junior Walker, Shotgun. And from that moment, I've got a grin on my face, even though I know what's coming. And everything about this film is acted so well by a very small cast, actually. There's hardly anybody in this film. And done so, so well. Truly terrifying. And full attention. It's brilliant. See it.
Okay. 4 from Alison. Jonathan, what do you give Misery?
I'm also going to go for 4. Okay. Everything Alison just said. And Kathy Burke's amazing.
She so is. Kathy Burke.
Yeah, she is. I love Kathy Burke.
Kathy
Burke should be in this film. Damn it. Like, I was doing so well. Bates. No, that is a different film.
Laura?
4 from me.
Wow.
This is a barnstormer of a film.
It is.
Emma?
Cosine 4.
Yay! That's awesome. Who'd have thought that a horror slash thriller would get 16 on this show?
It got 16. It's better than Touch of Evil.
That's brilliant.
As good as The Devil's Backbone.
It's better than Heathers.
It's fucking so much better than
Heathers. Oh, Heathers is fun.
But, you know, all of those feelings that I had last night are swept away now. Oh, I've got definitely a smile on my face. Misery was great, and I loved every minute of it. I couldn't wait to start talking about it, actually.
We should tell Jonathan, Heathers became our lowest rated film ever.
What?
Whoa.
It scored 7.
What is
wrong? Holy crap.
Wait a minute. But we did Brown Bears.
I know.
Have you seen Heathers recently?
I've seen Heathers. Yeah, I saw Heathers like a few months ago. It was fun and wacky.
No.
It's lost a lot.
Well, obviously I didn't see it the first time round, did I?
Well, not the first time round, because you're far too young for that, aren't you, Jonathan? Some of us are old enough to see it the first time round. That's right.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you guys for doing the show. It's been a pleasure talking with you all this evening. Sorry, we had the late start and everything.
Sorry.
Sorry?
That's okay. Can we do something with subtitles next time?
Oh, Jonathan, I'm so glad you said that. Oh, you missed, what do you call it?
Devil's Backbone.
Devil's Backbone.
I was originally meant to be on Devil's Backbone, and then I got bumped to Desperado.
That's fucked up, dude.
I don't know, I'm going to call Bardua with stars.
Desperado had some subtitles.
It barely had any dialogue.
This is movies you should see, not movies you should read.
It didn't need dialogue. It had Selma Hayek and Antonio Banderas.
It didn't have no subtitles. Misery didn't have any subtitles at all ever at any point. There you go. Desperado, more highbrow than Misery. You heard it here first.
You heard my eyes roll. That's what you heard.
No, that's a kind of sticky, liquidy noise. Yeah. It's gross.
It's revolting. Don't make me do it.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, everybody. You want to go and listen to our other shows that we make. We do lots of them. We have a whole network of shows. Jonathan's on one.
I am indeed.
It's called The Greatest Events in Sporting History.
We should have an episode coming out soon-ish, depending on when Shane can fit in the editing. Featuring Laura.
Yay!
This episode that we're recording right now isn't going to be out as a podcast for at least another 2 months.
Really? So,
yeah, that's what I said. We should have another podcast. Shane can get the editing done.
Well played, sir.
I think this might actually come out as a podcast around sort of February time.
Oh, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah. Hope you're having a good one, yeah? Maybe Happy even Chinese New Year.
We should have done a Christmas show.
We haven't done a Christmas show. Well, we'll do one and
we'll
slot it
in.
We'll
do one closer Christmas.
Do a Christmas show.
Add some sleigh bells to the music, it'll be right.
We'll get
everyone. Do you want to be on the Christmas?
Definitely. We'll get everyone on the Christmas show because I can have 15 people on this chat.
That
system.
Will be nuts.
Everyone picks their favourite Christmas film.
It will be fine because I can mute people. So only who I
you
want
do
to
remind
talk
me of Annie Wilkes.
Can talk. So
my show. Definitely my show.
And
my
I've
ending.
Got,
my
not
ending.
Done yet.
My heroine character.
I'm not done yet.
What?
Hang
go on.
Sorry. Emma does a show too.
She does.
It's The Greatest Show in the Galaxy. We only do the greatest things at Simply Syndicated.
Absolutely.
We don't do mediocre Milky Way.
Shit you should possibly look at if you're really bored. No.
Except when we're doing shows on Desperado. Yeah.
Crap, you should glance at.
The greatest show in the galaxy, which at present is available on simplyeverything.com, which you'll know if you're listening to this episode on Simply Everything. If not, and it's February, it's probably out as a podcast by now, and you've probably got it anyway. But it's about Doctor Who, and it's awesome.
Thank you.
So you should go and do that. Laura doesn't have a podcast.
No.
She just hangs around with us a lot.
Yeah.
She does.
It's nice to have you.
Oh, thank you. I enjoy
this. She does design work, so if you need anything designed...
Yeah.
What?
You know...
You've just made her busy for the next...
Yeah.
Well,
that's good, though.
I've got a 5-minute slot coming up in about 3 months.
Oh,
so.
That's good. Oh, that's okay, then.
Yeah, fine.
The person who's listening to this might fill that.
Yeah.
5 minutes.
It'd be good.
Yeah.
Okay, then. I think that's everything we have to talk about for now, isn't it? Yeah. So thank you for listening.
So.
We'll be back soon with more episodes of this stuff. After I think we're going to do another week of hell like this one again. It's been fun.
I liked this.
I've enjoyed it. I just need to rearrange my sleep pattern a little bit better.
Yeah. Don't do one a week. Do 8 in a week.
Do 8 in a week and 42 hours.
That's
you can do it.
Yeah.
Have you been on all of them? Oh, no. Alison hasn't been on all of them, have you?
No,
She's
I
been
missed
on
one.
Nine of
you
the...
You missed Ghost
oh,
Watch,
sorry,
didn't you?
7 of the 8.
I missed Ghost Watch and that was it.
But I did all of them. And I did Shaken Not Stirred and Do Ask Do Tell. Oh, you did Do Ask Do Tell
I did
as
Do
well.
Ask Do Tell, yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway.
So, yeah, I've done 8 podcasts this week. That's fucked up.
It's not. Don't worry.
I don't think me and Shane have done 8 this year.
You haven't.
And it's November.
You have.
You've still got the 20-hour review of the year show to put out.
Yeah, but there's
no
Olympics this year. What are we going to talk about?
Yeah, we're going to talk about.
Spot the personality of the year. Who won what? Fuck off, Arm. Oh, yeah, you're already at Arm. That's what happens. This podcasting.
We have to call an end to this show, so goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.